Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts, Leslie M. Scott Jones and David Von Strawn. And now, here's David and Leslie.
Hello, Charlottesville! It is Sunday. It is 10 o'clock. It is time for Homegrown, your show about local art, here in the new and burgeoning Charlottesville, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Strawn, a.k.a. the Devious One, a.k.a. Nefarious Rucker, a.k.a. Negro Suave, a.k.a. Black Frodo. Little guy. Hairy feet. Trying to get through the darkness. Trump's America. Y'all know how it is. I'm tired of saying, how does he get away with this bleep? So I'm just going to stop saying it. I'm not going to entertain this new vacuum of media BS that we're into now, that he has driven us into now to distract us from political bombshells that would have, like, killed the political career of any other candidate in this here election. So I'm not gonna talk about Trump. I am, however, going to talk to the lovely, the loquacious, the lascivious Leslie M. Scott Jones about this new Whitney Houston documentary that I've watched, like,
that's what you want to talk about?
Yes, that I've watched like 8 times already.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
No.
It's fascinating.
Is it?
It's fascinating.
What did you learn about Whitney?
I learned that she likes coke.
Apparently Bobby Brown takes drugs.
Oh.
No, but it.
That is a perfect example of the music industry putting forth a vision of someone that is completely not it. Like, you know, she was put forth as, oh, she's the darling. Oh, you know, Aretha's her grant, her godmother, you know. Oh, she's so sweet and pretty. Mm-hmm. Nah, she's from the hood, man. Y'all
Whitney's
didn't know.
From Newark, and Whitney liked to get high.
Yeah.
And she's been
lot.
Liking to get high since teens. Lot. So don't get it twisted. America's sweetheart was not so sweet.
Can I just tell you?
Before y'all put that makeup on her.
One of my friends from high school was completely enamored with her, right? Loved The Bodyguard, thought, you know, like all that. We went to see her at Wolf Trap. He had his Bodyguard poster, like, already in a little tube,
stop
right?
It.
All she had to do was sign it, have somebody else put it back in a tube, and mail it back to him, right? We waited backstage. Mm-hmm. He got all excited. He hands it to the guy to take to her. He was gone, like, 15, 20 minutes. Comes back, and the guy says, yeah, she's not going to sign it. And I was like, what? All she had to do, like, what? Mm. Yeah, after that, I was like, no.
All right,
so. I'm not down with Whitney.
All right,
like,
so.
She don't know where her money comes from. I'm done.
So half of the pictures of Whitney are in a semi-somnolent state, very tired, very fatigued. But there is, it's not done in an abrasive, like, ridiculous comedic sense in order to torture her. She comes from a family that swept a lot of trauma underneath the rug.
Yes.
Hashtag black families.
Right.
And there was an interesting quote that, and we'll get to our guests soon. I know that you're waiting patiently, but I do want to talk about this so much. There is a Clinton Johnson, executive producer of HNIC of Homegrown. Love you, Clinton. Flipping the boards. There was a reverend that was also a family friend, and he talked about the life, or the double life, rather, that Whitney led.
Yes.
How Whitney was Whitney Houston in the spotlight, and at home she was Nippy.
Yeah.
And everybody called her Nippy. And she talked about, or he, the reverend, the family friend, rather, talked about the double consciousness of that black people have to live in
yes.
this country. He said when that Whitney was raised to play the game of the culture of whiteness.
Yes.
To dress white, to talk white, to act white, and it causes a quote unquote double consciousness.
Yeah.
To where the person doesn't know where they start or where they end.
Yep.
And I think that's an interesting dichotomy and something to express predominantly in black people that we go through a lot. in this country. It's like, where do I start and where do I end? And it's a constant confusing array because we're always being taught that what we're doing is less than or not enough. So we have to do this and live this and be this way. And I just thought that was an interesting interesting statement.
Du Bois originally who proposed that, the double consciousness.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, I like her.
See how people make my segues for me?
I like her.
And I don't have to do it myself? It's a beautiful thing. Sophia Colby, Denise Stewart, and Jerry Shermer in the house with Homegrown. What was the word? Pushing? Pressing? Doing their press junket, I guess. I Never Saw It Coming is going down at Live Arts Theater in Rehearsal A, February 23rd. Thank you so much for racing into the show. We appreciate your promptness. And
we're pleased to be
and always your presence, Jerry. You're always beloved and everything that you do.
Ain't she
and
sweet?
Everything that you put your foot in, rather, production-wise, always comes out amazing.
Why, thank you.
Being that you are a dramaturg for Ragtime does not make me biased in any sort of way.
No, not at all.
That but great experience. But you just hold a special place in my heart, so thank you so much for being here, and thank you so much for contributing your time. So, talk to us about I Never Saw It Coming, because I never saw this coming. I didn't know that this was in the script for today. This is what I do.
You are the cleverest.
I make horrible jokes, and I come in completely uninformed. I love my city. I love my town. Okay. So talk about it. Talk about I Never Saw It Coming. What's the play about? What are we going to see?
Well, the play I Never Saw It Coming was originally written in 1997. For a group of teen peer educators that went by the name of VIVA, Voices for Interpersonal Violence Alternatives. And that group was put together under the auspices of the Sexual Assault Resource Agency and the Shelter for Help in Emergency. And we combined forces and created a teen peer education group. And over the course of about 8 years, I was with it for seven. We serve close to 2,000 students a year all over Virginia doing this play that was written by our local playwright, Doug Grissom, for teens about dating and relationship violence and sexual violence among teenagers. And last year, Sophia and I were both on a committee to look at selections for the upcoming year for a teen play for Live Arts. And I brought in my old chestnut and passed the script out to about six or seven high school students who were working with this group to look at the future plays for Live Arts for teens. And I passed it out to them and I said, this was done 20 years ago. I have no idea if it's still relevant. Does it speak to you? Does it resonate? Are these things still going on? Is there a place for this today? And I'll let Sophia describe what her response was and the group's response was, and then we'll take it from there.
Sophia, yeah. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was still, unfortunately, very relevant. Just reading over the script, I felt a really strong connection to it. Like, the only thing outdated about it was, like, some of the slang words. So, yeah, I just felt like it was a way to make a change in something that I saw happening around me to a lot of people that I knew and just culturally in places that, yeah, in environments that I've lived in. Yeah, so that's why I joined it. I just thought that it really eloquently expressed a problem that was going on and something that I wanted to fix.
How prevalent and how pervasive would you say that this problem is now in your life?
Your stats.
Yeah. Correct me if I get this wrong.
Okay. Always.
So one in four girls and one in five boys are one in six?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, are sexually assaulted before the age of 18 in our current America. So, yeah, it's still unfortunately shockingly prevalent. Like, pretty much, I don't want to say it's as bad as it was when the play was originally written, because some things have gotten better to, like, make people more aware of, you know, what consent is, how to give it, and in what circumstances it's not given. But it's still happening. It's still real, as I'm sure the whole Me Too movement has increased awareness about it. It just felt like a really good time to kind of jump in there and sort of show people what this looks like to teenagers and to the people around them, because I feel like they're sort of an impulse when we see like really terrible things happen in the news and in the media to be like, this is awful, but it happens over there, you know? So people don't see how like an abusive relationship is also part of the problem. Some stuff, like little things, I guess, that you're used to because you see them so much are still contributing to this bigger issue. Yeah.
Yeah, we also have other stats about relationship violence that up to 60% of high school students will be in an abusive dating relationship before high school graduation, and 25% of them also experience physical violence. So it is pervasive, and interestingly enough, the statistics have not actually changed when we look at data from 30 years ago. I think the very first data that was given was in the 1920s, mm-hmm. and it was still 25% of women will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. So stats are not changing a whole lot.
So, yeah, so I'm sorry to interrupt. Keep going, actually. Well, I've already interrupted. So it proves that it's not media, it's not television, it's not. So where would you say this attitude lends itself to of sexual abuse, of dominance, of control?
Well, you can take my 30-hour workshop.
Absolutely.
That I provide.
Money is no
recommend.
Option when Jerry's talking.
No, it was for free, but it was for teens. So once the kids came on board and thought that this was something they wanted to pursue. This summer, under the auspices of Live Arts, I conducted two different workshops, same workshop offered twice, and it was 9 to 3, 5 days a week, mm-hmm. and in the morning, the kids were able to work with the original playwright to update the play, so that was a huge experience. Because a lot of the teens came to us wanting to get writing experience, mm-hmm. playwriting experience. Mm-hmm. And yep. there were lots of things in the play that were antiquated that we had, not just language, yep. but the original play did not provide any information about social media harassment, because you know what happened in 1997? There wasn't social media.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, that's kind of mind-blowing in and right. of itself. So yeah. We've added probably everyone's favorite part in the new updated script is what we do with harassment, social media harassment, mm-hmm. to somebody who has come out to her girlfriends as a sexual assault survivor, mm-hmm. and the response that is given, and everyone's on their phones mm-hmm. texting about this in a large group. Mm-hmm. We also didn't have any representation for the LGBTQ community, mm-hmm. and this script is, mm-hmm. We have relationships all over. Some are specifically about same gender relationships. Some are just, we have a lot of ensemble work, that's the way the play is created, okay. where people use pronouns, you know, as they come up in the script, and it's not, you know, put in its own little category. So that was an important update. And the third important update, which is the current philosophy or notion about how are we going to address this in our community. And when I was working in the field 20 years ago, we were very conscious of talking about people having the rights to say what happens to their own body. And that has been updated since very successfully and very importantly by talking about not only are you responsible for keeping yourself, not only are you privileged to keep yourself safe, but you are also responsible for keeping the person yeah. next to you safe. Mm-hmm. So bystander intervention is how education is being is being conducted yeah. now. So we have some examples in the new script of a situation where somebody saw something happening and chose not to do anything, mm-hmm. And how they felt about what it felt like not to do anything. Right. And then we went on with another scene in which we demonstrate one of the ways in which you can intervene in a way that's safe for you, and helping somebody else that you see is being put in a compromising situation.
I think the material is so powerful because it doesn't come across like preachy, as in like
right.
we're telling you how to feel about stuff and what to do. It's more like there are these characters and they're kind of authentically processing situations that they've been in and situations that they've seen, and through their sometimes denial of it. Like we have a whole bunch of scenes actually where survivors of dating violence are kind of justifying it to themselves and being like, no, but he loves me, but I care about her, and he doesn't hit me, and he apologizes. So, like, stuff like that, just kind of these people justifying it to themselves. And when you can see that and see it presented explicitly in this, like, we're going to watch this and see what we think about it kind of way, right. I think it makes people kind of reanalyze just some cultural values that we have, and maybe, like, situations that they've been in or that they've seen. So I think that's part of the power of it, that it's not explicitly like, don't abuse your girlfriend, that's really not cool. It's
I think
that would be good to say too.
That is very true, but that's not going to convince anybody who's not believing it just by it saying that.
Leslie, you know? And Jerry, I think y'all remember the Saturday afternoon specials that were incredibly preachy and incredibly, like, ham-fisted and over the head, like, don't do drugs. But no, this sounds like more raw and gritty, and I definitely want to hear more about it. We got to pay a bill. We're going to come right back. Do more stuff. See how I segued and went through that? Sophia Colby, Denise Stewart, Jerry Schirmer are here at Homegrown. This is Homegrown. Drop!
Hello, everyone. This is Dina Jennings, your local luthier and physician. I'm at Homegrown, your show about local art at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
17 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, this is Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David. That's Leslie. Clinton on the board. Jerry Schirmer, Sophia Colby, and Denise Stewart are in the house where I never saw it coming. An important production about social media, all types of sexual assault and harassment. Rehearsal A, Live Arts Theater, February 23rd. 8:30 p.m. P.M.?
That's it.
I'm guessing it's P.M. Sophia, you have a little monologue. Did you want to
sure.
Did you want to read it out?
Yeah. Should I introduce it?
I think it speaks for itself. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. So this is our scene 8. It's called I Never Saw It Coming, after the title of the play. I never saw it coming. That was the weird thing. He yelled a lot, got really mad, and sometimes I did think he was about to hit me, but he never did. Then one night, I did something that pissed him off, some little thing, and he didn't seem all that mad, and then suddenly, wham, left this big welt on the side of my face. I had to lie to people about what it was. After that, he was really sorry, really ashamed of what he did. He was so sweet now. I thought maybe it was even a good thing, like it woke him up or something, made him realize how he'd treat me. But after a few weeks, he hit me again. And he was sorry again, but I could tell, not as sorry, because now that he crossed that line, it was easier and easier to cross it again and again and again. I still couldn't admit to anyone what he was doing to me. I couldn't even tell my best friend until I was in the emergency room with a concussion.
Jerry, you are the originator and producer of the show. Mm-hmm. Talk about why. Actually, what I've noticed at Live Arts recently is y'all are going to do Rent. The wonderful T. Ames will be directing that. And also this show. And also The Wolves also that just came out by Teen. Serious social issues that are going down right now. Serious issues that I don't think 10 or 15 years ago that teachers and evaluators and instructors would have been brave enough to introduce to children these ages, because they didn't think that they could comprehend this or, like, perform it well or had firsthand accounts of these experiences, which unfortunately they do.
Right.
So talk about the stance that Live Arts has made to bring hardcore social issues to the forefront, to let teenagers perform and give their firsthand accounts from.
I think there's two things. Whenever a play is proposed for Live Arts, our artistic director, Bree Luck, will say, why here, why now? Those are the questions anybody proposing a play needs to be able to answer. And the why here, why now, for this play, will always be present. It was present 20 years ago. It's present now. And I also think that a lot of the social consciousness that you might see in some of the choice of plays is also driven by the kids themselves. As much as we have fun at Live Arts in the summer doing fun musicals, I think both the kids and the staff are really committed to giving material to the kids to do that makes them feel empowered.
I think that after that March for Our Lives march in March in Charlottesville, I think the wind kind of changed and kind of showed that teenagers do have capacity and agency and
And, you know,
courage.
It's interesting. I keep in touch with some of the kids who did this show many years ago, and there are an overwhelming majority have kept in touch with me because they said this experience made them feel powerful. It made them feel like they not only had a message, but they were given the tools and the opportunity to feel that kind of strength in talking to their community, talking to their peers. And I just think all kids need to have that opportunity to know that they can change the world. And this is the age where they, once you introduce it, in adolescence, they go forward as adults with that sense.
Yeah.
Sophia, can you talk about what type of plays you had done before this and talk about what it was like doing this type of material as opposed to the type of material you'd done before? What was easier? What was more difficult?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I feel like my experience is kind of slightly different from the other cast members in that, like, I've always really liked theater, and I've always liked the environment of theater and just being around it, but I haven't always been involved with it in terms of acting, so I've done kind of everything. I've done lighting design, I've run spotlight, I play piano, so I was an accompanist. I've done, like, some acting, but I wouldn't say it's, like, the primary thing I do in regards to theater.
It is now.
I guess it is now. so it's different in that the technical roles that I'm filling are different between this and other shows. I feel like in terms of when I've been acting in other shows versus this one, this has been a much more intimate experience, I would say, because our cast is pretty small, and then it's just these lovely people over here working to help us produce it. So it feels a lot more like a community, and it feels quite supportive and, just and more like a friendship. And but other plays that I've done have had, like, 60 people or more, so it doesn't feel as close-knit of a community, for sure. This material, of course, is socially involved, but I feel like all theater is socially involved in some way.
I feel like it has to be.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, why here, why now, right? People are probably wondering who that shadowy figure is in the back. Just screaming out Denise to
I'm going to bring Denise up, but I want to say real quickly that the kids who went through, all the kids on stage have gone through a really intensive training that we spent close to 15 hours working on what the issues are, what the stats are of sexual violence, of dating violence. They have been taught to how to lead group discussions so that after every play that we will be doing, and we hope to produce this play another 5 times around the community in schools and for youth groups, they lead the discussion groups. The adults are not in the room. They have learned how to receive questions, how to ask questions, and they also have been trained in crisis intervention because invariably a survivor will come up to a cast member they identify with from what they saw on the show and talk to them about their personal experiences. So the kids have been given training on how to handle that and how to pass that on as a reference to a qualified agency. So they are highly informed, highly committed, and very talented people. And now I'm going to pass it over to Denise, and she can tell you how talented they are.
Wow. Denise, how you doing?
I'm great.
Thanks for coming out of the doldrums and becoming one of us.
So what was it like directing this group of kids? Because you work with college-age kids on a regular basis. So what was the biggest thing that that shocked you between working with college-age kids and then working with teens?
Well, I'd say schedules and transportation are the biggest issues.
that's really been the stick in my craw on this one. But it is there is the 8 different students from 8 different schools. We have one college student in the cast. So 7 different high schools, 1 university, and they are all really active in their own lives. So just the logistics of getting them all in the room has been probably our biggest challenge. And so in the room, once I get them in the room, I have really enjoyed working on this. They take on the scene work with such heart, and they're really open to direction. That, and if you've directed, that's an awesome thing.
You ask, make a
suggestion, or you ask a question, and something shifts or something changes, and that's wonderful. This play has 26 scenes in it. So it could be, you're not tracking one character. Sophia plays many, 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 many people. She plays aggressors, and she plays survivors, and she plays bystanders. She plays lots of different people. So if you're in the audience, you're not tracking. And they may, an audience may do that, try to track her, but pretty quickly they figure out you can't.
Right.
And so I think one of the challenges is making the scene work real for those characters in that moment, and then helping them transition back to snap back into, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And I really don't like show choir kind of presentational things. So part of it is to use 8 chairs and the actors to support different scenes so that visually it's interesting, because this is a no frills kind of show, you know, no tech.
I imagine.
That's it. So it's really been, I've enjoyed it. Yeah. They're awesome.
I think that the aspect that we all play the, like, I guess 3 different roles in regards to this issue is, like, really smart, because, like, we don't really want the audience to get attached to, like, this one person as, like, this is what the bad guy looks like, so to speak. Because, like, we really want to also bring to attention, like, male sexual assault and, like, dating violence against males. We want to show people that it happens, that it's not something to be laughed at, or, just stuff that our culture does to male victims of sexual violence. Mm-hmm. Like, we say it's a woman's issue, and it does disproportionately affect women, and, you know, it has to do more with power than with, you know, sex and with relationships, obviously. And, you know, the relationship and the sex is just a weapon that the aggressor or perpetuator will use against people. So it will stay pretty bad until, you know, power structures shift a little bit and allow people to, to have more reliance upon themselves and stuff. But, we just want to bring attention to male victims as well.
Yeah.
So that,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Because assault knows no bounds, and I'm sorry, we have to wrap up, but I want to ask so many more questions. So when you do one of the other 6 performances, hopefully we'll have you back and we can ask more questions about this. But I do want I did want to keep on the tone of harassment, and not it's only that just an aggressor thing. Like, it happens in the family, like it happens at home. I think there's a certain statistic that shows, like, a certain percentage of people are assaulted
90%
by it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know better than I do. So assault happens everywhere. Let's all do our part and try to minimize it as much as possible.
Yeah.
And if you see something, say something, for the love of God. Sophia Colby, Denise Stewart, Jerry Schirmer, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for having
for being
us.
On the
Appreciate
show. So we are going to do artistic events, because that's what we always do, because we have so many in Charlottesville. So many. Here are just some of the artistic events happening this week. Currently running through April 13th, the American Shakespeare Center features this 2019 Actors Renaissance season featuring Henry IV, Part 1, The Merry Wives of Windsor, William Shakespeare.
Thank you.
Starting February 7th, And Page Hates Fun. And starting March 8th, Arden of Faversham at the Blackfriars Theater in Stanton. Currently running now through February 24th, check out these local artist shows. Second Street Gallery pairs 2 painters with 2 photographers, Sharon Shapiro, Stacey Evans from McGuffey Art Center, and Russ Warren and Bill Moritz. Also at McGuffey Art Center, they observe Black History Month, like they should be, by celebrating Charlottesville's Black creative community. Look for works by Guy, Dow, Rose, Rose Hill, Michael E. Williams, Anthony Scott, Dina Jennings, Bolan Leata, Boyeg, Liz, Cherry Jones, Sahara Clemens, and much, much more. New City Arts, an exhibit of paintings, embroideries, and sculptures inspired by Latino women by Karina A. Monroy. Chroma Arts Project presents Laura Wooten, Spirit of Place, Landscapes Real and Imagined, and Jennifer Esser, Where Time Abstracts Truth. The Fiber and Stitch Art Collective displays artistic quilts at New Dominion Bookshop. Check out the episode with Jane Fellows that we did. It was awesome. Piedmont Virginia Community College has two exhibits, two in the North and South galleries of the V. Earl Dickinson Building. The North Gallery features Skyward, makes sense, in the North, by photographer John Grant. And the South Gallery features Look Out, a collection of community portraits.
You are such a goofball.
Aaron Farrington, Jay Johnson, Greg Antrim, Kelly, Jesus Pino, Sanjay Sushak, and Guillermo.
Guillermo.
Currently running through February 23rd. I said Ubilia. I said it all. I said it all, Doctor. I said Ubilia. Ubilia. Currently running through February 23rd, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night, Time at Live Arts. Last Chance Broadway, Our Way, a teen musical review at Four County Players. Also, Last Chance, the UVA Theater Group presents the world premiere of Sifras by Margot Mezgles. February 20th, Fun for the Young at UVA's Fairland Art Museum of Art. Art-related story time led by arts educator Amy Hunt, while museum docents encourage kids to engage with museum exhibitions. Nice. This is all on February 21st. Three things. The UVA MFA Reading Series continues with grad student Anna Tomlinson and Fina Mbazi. Umbabazi. Umbabazi, reading from their work at New Dominion Bookshop. Almost got it. February 21st through March 3rd, Guerrilla Theater Productions does Ibsen's Hedda Gabler with a southern twist. Also on February 21st, The House of Bell does another bar takeover at Rapture with Stacey Lane Matthews of RuPaul's Drag Race and her daughter, Thundora Thighs. They all going to be there. All right. On the 22nd, UVA Fralin Art Museum offers snacks, food, music, and an introduction to upcoming exhibits at Final Friday. And on the 23rd, Second Street Gallery, resident artist Jessica Burnham shows you how to make your own little universe in creating tiny worlds. And for your music options.
You have
options,
your own little tiny world over there by yourself, don't you? It's all David's little tiny world.
Y'all are invited. Y'all can come.
All right, today, Betty Metcalf at Pippin Hill Farm and Vineyards at 1. Sue Harlow at the Batesville Market, also at 1. Michael Clem. Hey, Michael, come back on the show. And Rusty Spidell at Glasshouse Winery at 2. The fabulous Jim Wave at Albemarle Ciderworks at 2:30. Charlottesville Symphony plays two works by Revel and Codley's Variations on a Hungarian Folk Song at 3:30 at Mile Channel High School. Tomorrow, Onyx Manor.
Slam! Da, 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 da.
Not that Onyx?
No.
Not that.
Could you back up just a little bit? My personal space is being invaded. I mean, I love you, but okay. Onyx Manor brings the jazz fusion to Rapture. February 19th, Eli Cook at Dirty Nellie's. Eli, come back on the show for real. Like, we need you to play again. The 19th, Lewis Smith and Friends at Fellini's. On the 20th, hear the emotion of soul with the energy of punk from Harley and the House of Juniper at Rapture. Also on the 20th, LG and Friends at the Whiskey Jar open mic with Neil Goodlow at Dirty Nellie's. On the 21st, get your post-rock and post-hardcore fix at the Ix Art Park with Colorado's Comrades playing with Genosha, Smoke Signals, Sunshine Hysteria from Woodbridge, and making their debut, Time Nothing. Classic R&B and neo-soul are yours with Tanya Ray and the T-Ray Band at the Whiskey Jar, the Currys at the Whiskey Jar, No Particular Order at Dirty Nellie's, Michael Ellswick and Company at Fellini's. That's all on the 21st. On the 22nd, former guest and reggae man Greg Ward heads the Greg Ward Project at Glasshouse Winery.
We had him on the show.
Timmy Riles at Dirty Nellie's, the Blinders at Holly's Diner, DJ Groovematic at Rapture. On the 23rd, Gabriel Planas at Fellini's, Ships in the Night, and Game Over play the Black Light Blot. Bleh. That's a tongue twister. Black Light Body Paint Dance Party at the
Black Light Body Paint. Black Light Body Paint.
The University of Wales at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall, DJ Tova at Rapture, Yonder Phonics at Holly's Diner, Stories and Songs with Coda Curl at Oakheart Social, and Get Your Good Blues with Johnny B and the Goods at Dirty Nellie's. That's all on 23rd. Oh, my goodness. All right. Every Sunday, it's Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School.
Nah, they're getting the booms.
Boom. Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music Weekly Open Jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church.
Stay for it.
Tango Music with Miles Pierce and Betty Metcalf at the Bebedero. Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar. Songwriter Night at the Local. That's all Monday. Every Tuesday, Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero. The Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar. And the Traditional Session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, Bachata Fusion at the Ix Park. The Mike Krasinski and Jeff Jacker Quartet at Miller's. Every Thursday, Humberto Sales and Vincent Zorn do Gypsy Rumba at the Bebedero. And every Thursday, John Dirt at Miller's. All right, we're going to pay a little bill. We'll be right back.
Oh, this is Homegrown Drop.
This is Joel Jones. You're listening to Homegrown.
Not a big
94.7.
Bill. A little bill. A couple of dollars. That's we're going to put something on it.
37 minutes past the hour.
Put something on it.
You're listening to Homegrown. We ain't going to pay the whole bill. We just make sure it don't get turned off. That's all.
Can I put it in my baby's name?
He's trifling. He's so trifling. See, this is why we can't have nice things.
You know how we do, though?
J.J. Johnson, Anthony Scott.
We got to make a way out of no way. You understand?
Part of the Black History Month programming special that we do in Homegrown on McGuffey Arts Center. Their music, their art is going up currently, running through now through the February 24th. That is how it's going.
Going well, going well.
Good. You didn't get eaten by the couch, so that's good.
Yeah, I'm used to it.
Yeah.
I'm a diesel mechanic, so I work on all the greasy.
Yeah, I was going to say, got to get it in when
I get it in.
Let me get 20 minutes of this nap real quick before I go on the show.
Hey, don't laugh at power naps. They sustain you.
I'm a power nap professional. Like, we could do a show just on that,
right?
Alone.
Can I just need 20 minutes. I just need 20 minutes. Leave me alone.
So we got a few, without further ado, we got some images of your stuff going up right here. I believe who's the first group is Anthony.
Talk about it.
Tell us. Hey. He's like, oh, this is familiar.
that's an old piece. Old to me, new to some.
Right. Now, this is all pieces of paper. This looks like 8x11s.
Yeah, it was
constructed together.
It was a grid photo. It actually did. It was come off of maybe a 6x8 photo, and I turned it into that piece.
Right.
All 12x12 squares.
Mm-hmm. Right on. But I just wanted to show like bits and clips. I didn't want to like go through. This is exquisite right here.
That's an oil painting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and which song is this?
That actually it's a poem that I've written.
Oh. That's what's up.
Yeah.
So you work in different mediums. Pencil drawing.
Oil, pastel, charcoal.
Okay. So what's your favorite?
I'd say charcoal is probably my favorite. It's
really?
Messy. It's messy, but I like getting messy.
So are you able to do stuff with charcoal that you're not able to do with oil?
Sure, yeah.
How do you make the determination which medium you're going to use for which piece?
Well, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it just comes with the piece. I might do a mixed media piece, which might involve charcoal, acrylic paint, and ink. I mean, sometimes I mix it up with all different type of mediums. I'll spread them out.
Mm-hmm.
I never mixed oil with anything else.
Where'd you get your influences from? Like, who did you watch and who did you?
Bob Ross. making
me
happy
too.
Trees. Making happy
me
trees.
Me too.
Yeah. Bob Ross. He was the man coming up. So yeah, I got a lot of influence from Bob Ross making happy trees.
Right.
Okay. So you say you're 9 to 5 because you know we're all artists here. We know we all gotta have a 9 to 5. Is being a mechanic, and this is your passion. So how did you? I mean, other than watching Bob Ross on Sunday afternoons, you know, how did you get interested in becoming a visual artist? Like, where did that introduction in your practical life come from?
Well, basically, coming up, that was my go-to when I could escape anything going on outside in the real world, as some of us called it.
Right.
But basically, once I put pen to paper or whatever, paint brush to canvas, and I was creating my own world. I was somewhere else then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how did you go about? Because we always like to talk to artists about how to make their dream real, right? And how you do that? How you go about, you know, getting your stuff shown? How do you, you know, buy materials and all that stuff? So, how did you? Did you just learn as you went along, like what works?
Actually, I went to several different art programs. One of them being a governor school. I went to that one for, actually I got selected 2 years or 3 years to go to the governor school. So
that's awesome.
That was pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
And taking different studio art and different courses through high school. So it was always opportunities for me to learn new types of art, new techniques.
Mm-hmm.
It was always something different.
Very cool.
So the images we've got here, it's one's a portrait of King, one's Biggie, one's Tupac, or the work that you're showing at McGuffey, are they all portraits of famous people?
Yes.
And so how do you choose the your
There's
subjects?
One that's not a famous person, and that was the Indian head. It was an Indian lady.
Uh-huh.
And
we don't have
that. That one's sold.
Yeah, but you have to go see the
Yes, we have to go see it.
You have to go see it.
That was the first one to sell. The Indian lady.
See the exhibit, David.
Yeah, y'all have to check it out. They have a nice array of
I treat every show like
different.
A poker hand. I never know what I'm going to get. And I don't know. Now, JJ, let's rotate it over to you, because you seem to be mad quiet in the cut. You have wonderful skills of yourself.
I'm not a huge talker, but I try.
He's not a huge talker, but he comes on a radio show.
Bang, right, yeah, you know. This is a good idea. I think this will work out.
Yeah, I talk a little bit.
Mm-hmm. All right. You're going to have to.
Yeah.
All right, so what are the mediums that you work with?
It's mostly a Copic marker, which is an alcohol-based marker. It's really good with blending and can give you a lot of different pops of color and, like, ooh, different textures and things. And sometimes I layer it with graphite pencil,
mm-hmm,
as well as a little bit of acrylic for highlights, but that's pretty much all I use.
Wow. Like, okay, I'm marveling at the detail in these faces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's gorgeous. And the longer, especially this one, so we're looking at Portrait of a Young Man, but the longer I look at it, like, the more things pop out to me. Like, I just noticed even though his face is black and white, you've added color to his eyes, mm-hmm, a little bit.
Yeah.
And in his beard, just a little bit, maybe. I'm seeing, like, hints of brown. I told you I'm old, just got bifocals this week, so I might be seeing
just got diagnosed.
I'm not
so
joking. we in this together.
my blind partner.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. But I'm with you.
So, brothers, talk about detail, because you both seem like you pay a lot of attention to facial features, cheekbones, eye lines, just really deep focus on facial features. What do you think is it that gravitated y'all towards predominantly portraits? And I'm not saying that that's what y'all, like, predominantly do, but I mean, just from the work that I'm seeing now, it just looks like
that is what I do.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, talk exactly about it, speak on it. Like, what is it about the love of the face that made you want to keep drawing faces?
Just exploring different personalities. Mm-hmm. Usually, yeah,
because you don't do it creepy, you're doing dudes too. So it's,
yeah.
Like,
well, this is we're looking at Kehinde Wiley right now. He actually was the one who did President Obama's
right
portrait, his
right
presidential
on
portrait.
I was like, why does he look familiar? And
yeah,
who is he?
And like, he's like, yes, Anthony, about his influences. This is like one of my main influences.
Right on.
Besides my uncle Frank Walker, mm-hmm, but yeah, Kehinde is just.
Frank Walker, who's been on the show numerous times, is an amazing human being.
Yes, yeah, he is.
And you can actually, when you look at our portraits, you can see them. That's like,
there is a similarity.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's
yeah
a number.
We have a lot of sit downs, and he's the one who told me like, the eyes are usually the focus of a portrait because they can, like, the eyes are a window to the soul.
Right.
Is what he always tells
me. The eyes can also tell a story themselves.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like,
so I believe if you capture that, you capture the eyes, and you can capture... You can capture a lot. You can capture, actually capture someone else. So you can capture their
word.
Yeah, you can capture some
intentions.
Intentions. Or you can actually, there's a lot of person can get just from that, you know,
yeah,
certain facial features.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's why people wear sunglasses, because they don't want you to see.
They don't want you to know what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's too revealing. Clinton's giving me the signal. I got to do a drop, pay a little bell. We're having too much fun. This is Homegrown. Drop!
Darkson Entertainment, you're listening to... Hey guys, this is John Johnson of Darkson Entertainment. You're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
48 minutes past the hour. 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David, that's Leslie. Clinton on the boards, JJ Johnson, Anthony Scott are in the house talking about their lovely, lovely art going down to McGuffey Center all through the 24th. Guys, first of all, thank you so much for, you know, sharing it. Because, you know, there's a lot of people in your positions that have 9 to 5. They're like, yo, I ain't got time for this, man. I ain't got time to, like, chase my dream, whatever. You know, I got these bills to pay. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just going to put this on the back burner, and I'm just going to get this money. But, yeah.
Because David brings it up. So art, it's interesting that I haven't asked this question before, because it's an obvious question. Art is so personal. And you get so attached to the stuff that you make. Do you guys ever have a resistance to sharing it?
The first 30 years of my life. I'm 31 now.
I've recently started sharing my art, I'd say 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Why would you say that is?
And was it hard to make that first share? It's like, maybe I should.
Yeah, I wasn't. Even to this day, I'm still. I don't know exactly how to price some of my art. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you think it wasn't good enough, or like?
Not good enough, but just like, I don't know exactly how to price it. And then I go to price it and put it in the show, and somebody's like, well, you need to price that higher.
Because I will buy that right now. Like, you are selling yourself short.
Know your worth and add tax.
Right. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, because you have to, like, my mom just went through this because she's a quilter, and she just started putting her stuff online to be sold. And she was asking me, she's like, I don't, you know, my mom's not it. She doesn't think of herself as an artist, even though the things that she produces are definitely pieces of art.
Forms of art,
yeah. And she's like, you know, how should I even price this? What do I do? And I was like, well, mom, like, figure out how much your hourly rate would be. Like, if somebody asked you to do one for them, how much would you charge them an hour based on how long you've been doing it, how much you know about what you're doing? And then you add a little bit to it, right. You know, like that. That's just how you have to work it. And some people, I know all kinds of artists that like do that, and they're like, that seems a little high. I don't know.
You gotta know your worth.
You gotta know your worth. Mm-hmm. And literally, when you look at that number and think it's really high, you have to be like, no, I am worth that. You know what? I spent this amount of time.
My craftsmanship is worth that. My emotion is worth that.
Right.
You know? A lot of things you factor in, like schooling, time put in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, countless hours go into each and every piece, and your training up to this point is a
material cost.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you gotta pay for that gas to go to Michael's.
Facts.
Facts.
So much fun.
A lot of us artists, we don't use cheap products either.
No.
So, you know,
no.
Paint within itself. I mean, a tube of paint can cost you anywhere from $10 to $20 just for a tube.
Right.
So. Like, yeah, the markers I use are $7.99 a piece, $8 give or take. So. I mean, it gets a little pricey.
Yeah.
It's a little pricey. It's
pricey.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, you know, capitalism is still a part of what we do.
Yeah, but there's the flip side of that, which is in a culture that's dominated by mass-produced products, people are used to getting stuff for a low price. Mm-hmm. And we can get stuff for the relatively low prices that we pay, you know, based on their creation costs, because they are mass produced and because they go out to large audiences and they're, you know, basically large markets. Once you dial something like art into that setup, things get difficult because art's expensive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And art costs. I know that for like the theater that we do, like there's no way that people would pay the ticket price to compensate.
But it's up to us.
Everything.
But it's up to us as artists to instill that value, to make it valuable enough. And that's what frustrates me. I'm sorry. Let me get on a tangent. And this was what frustrates me.
About.
Here we go. Tangent alert.
This is what makes me mad
about some of the directors out here is that they put... All right, thank you, 4 minutes. All right. No, I'm going to make it short. Like, if you demand us to pay a certain ticket price, you have to make sure that this production is worth putting up.
Yep.
Do not BS me and tell me that I should come to your half-ass production that is not worth the ticket price, because you're not setting a good example for all of the great theater that is elsewhere produced in a town. So you're watering down the product. You're diluting the product by
and I would also add that you also need to pay the artists that are producing the art. I mean, you can't expect people to produce their best work over and over and over again without getting some sort of compensation. Mm-hmm. Like, they have to. People have to live, and doing this, it's work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and, I mean, we all
and
have
bad productions. Bad productions make it so that actors can't get paid because people go and they're like, "Why well, wasted my money on this?" It's like, yeah, because you chose to invest in a bad production,
right?
And all right, go ahead.
Oh God, here we go. Now they all jump in. Oh God,
Anthony, JJ, how's it been being at McGuffey?
Thank you, Clayton.
It's awesome.
I was going to say, what did y'all learn from this experience? Like, being so young to, like, unveiling your art for the first time. Like, what did y'all learn? What is your experience in this?
I mean, the exposure has been, like, nothing but positive. Because a lot of people are like, I didn't know you were... Well, I don't like using the term an artist. I just say a creative because I don't want
y'all are dope. This is dope stuff.
Yeah,
you should be it.
Paint myself into a corner. But, I mean, it's been a great experience.
Yeah, JJ, when somebody says that for you, JJ, because this isn't your first show.
This is your first show.
Yeah. Like, you're just like, well, where have you been?
Because I do get that response a lot of the time because, I mean, like I said, the first 30 years of my life, I was, like, self-conscious about all of my work. But now I'm like, it is what it is.
Congratulations. You're an artist.
Welcome to the club, baby. We got jackets.
We got jackets. What are you, a large? See, you got diesel, so extra large. Word. You're already here. So, two minutes. We got to wrap up. Is there anything that y'all want to share? McGuffey Art Center, check it out through the 24th. A lot of other people are doing great work. But is there anything else that y'all want to share? Like, just, you know, just overall, just like experience, like just being out there. What's next down the pipe for y'all?
Well, I got a show coming up next month, supposedly, with another studio called Beaux-Arts Studio. So
okay.
I've got a lot of...
I heard of it.
I've had a couple connections that I've got through McGuffey, so... It's been
that's
all positive.
The idea.
So it's been all positive, all good.
You put up something, you network, and then...
Let me ask you, what would you say to... Say, let's imagine you have a fine young brother who knows that the show is going on at McGuffey, that it's
I'm
your work...
I'm going to see the show!
That it's your work and other people's work, but just hasn't been able to put it into his difficult schedule. What is that last thing that you can say to push him over the edge?
You gotta go
to go see
this. You gotta see.
If he doesn't come, we'll cut his toe off.
I'm going. Wow. All right.
You know, we can make that form of art too.
Yeah, it got gangster with it. It's like, we know some dudes.
We can turn a toe into a piece of art.
You know.
He now knows where you are.
Better come look at this art.
We'll come back every Sunday and we'll stand outside of this window. This window.
Like, I see you, man. I'm like running across Water Street parking lot.
Face on glass.
and represent these folks. That's awesome. Art by attrition, like brought to you by Homegrown.
Like you.
Nah, it's about time to wrap it up. Oh my God. And with that, you better come see this art at McGuffey Art Center. No, J.J. Johnson, Anthony Scott, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank also you. Want to thank Sophia Colby, Denise Stewart, and Jerry Shermer for, oh, Jerry, love you. I never saw a comment. Y'all need to check that out. Like, there's so much art. There's so much great stuff in this place that y'all need to check out. Stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call. They always do great stuff. I love you, Leslie.
I love you, David.
I love you, Clint. All right, we'll see. I won't be here next week. I'm going to NYC, so they're going to have to hold it down for me. But it's always a blast. So check it out next week. I'll be back in 2 weeks, and we'll see y'all later.
Peace.
Yeah.
All right, our opening music is from Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music is by Positive Collective. This is Ships in the Night playing right now. Any complaints about Homegrown should be directed to our attorneys at the fine Lifping Law Firm of Tuchterman Overman Munson and Burke, legal therapists that wrap around you like a thong. Remember to keep your dial on 94.7 WPBC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Somehow, someway, we'll see you next week.
The show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.